Tonight we're on, still in step 6 and 7. It's two paragraphs in the big book on page 75. We're not going to read those today. Does everybody have one of these and one of these? And we're reading from the steps we took tonight for those who are listening on the podcast. And it's this is the book written by Joe, the original Joe and Charlie, on how the big book comes alive. Actually, he didn't write this. Three young people sat and listened to him, and he talked. They met with him on a regular basis, and he talked about the steps, and they took notes together and put it together. I think one of the gifts of Joe and Charlie was that they were able to make the steps come alive in our life and make the big book help explain the way the big book's put together. It was a great gift that they gave to AA. They started their meetings in 1979, and they did those till 2000. Joe died around 2005, and Charlie about 2010, I believe. And they did 50 meetings, 35 meetings a week for all those years, and they helped a lot of people. It wasn't until I listened to them that I really understood how the program is put together in the book, and I've tried to build on that doing these study meetings. And 6 and 7 is the step that's changed me a lot. In fact, it's the step that is, if I'm having a good or bad day, it really is all related to how well I'm working steps 6 and 7. These are the steps that changed me. There's only two paragraphs in the big book on it. And it says, after I do steps 4 and 5, that I've admitted things are objectionable. I've seen my character. Now, we have this handout here, and this is the personality characteristics of self-will. And on the podcast, Chris put together really that spiritual checklist is really, really neat, and he put some questions in there. And if I'm living in self-will, I have selfishness, I'm dishonest, I'm frightened, I'm inconsiderate, pride, greedy, lustful, angry, envy. Anybody relate to any of this? Impatient, intolerant, judgmental, a lot of self-condemnation, self-importance. And it says, how do you feel? Restless, irritable, guilty, shame, discontent. And the point is, if I don't change my personality that I find in 4 and 5, nothing's going to change. I learn a lot in steps 4 and 5, and we talk about step 4 all the time like it's some climbing Mount Everest, but it's really just finding out the things in me that were blocking me from God and causing my fear and anger and my shameful conduct in relationships. And if I don't change my personality, nothing's going to change. But I can't change my personality without God's help. So 6 and 7 is where I'm willing to admit that there's certain things in me that are objectionable. And I've learned that in 4 and 5. And I ask God humbly to remove them in step 7. And I have to do that all day long. It's a step that's incorporated in step 10 and 11. In the big book, you ask yourself the question all day long, am I selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, fearful, self-centered? If I am, then I need to ask God to remove that thinking and change right away. Then at night it says when we retire, we look and we see where we're selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, fearful, and then we look at our day where we were like that and what we could do to change that. So the best thing I found on this explaining in terms of the study is the stuff in this in the steps we took. And we've done this before. I had thought of doing the 12 and 12, but I think our time is better spent looking at this. I've gotten most out of this, so see if you get something out of it as well. It starts where change is the name of the game. And it says, everybody thinks change is based on what you're going to get. A lot of people come here want to get something. They want to get knowledge. They want to get smart. They want to learn how to not drink or how to live better. But change has to do with what you're willing to get rid of, what you're willing to let go of. And it says, like a hot air balloon that goes up when you throw the sand out of it. A lot of people don't want to throw the sand out. They want to keep their sand and still go up. And what we have to find is the things that's dragging my balloon down. And all I have to do is let go of them, and then the balloon will go up with God's power. And so on the first page, it's really well written, these first few pages. I like this. All the change that comes about through God working in our lives, and we all want that, don't we? Mm-hmm. Is by my consent and my permission. And Sandy Beach said it so well. The whole program is summed up in two words: let go. Next week, I'll read from the Drop the Rock book. I'll read the story about Mary, and I'll read Sandy Beach's Drop the Rock. But we have to see what's dragging me down, and what am I willing to let go of? Because if I'm not willing to let go of it, I'm going to keep it. And I don't want to keep the things that are killing me, so I have to recognize it and be willing to let go of it. It says we have to make the decision. I have to make the decision, and I have to become willing and ready that I'm going to let go of these things, and then that starts change. Now, somebody said it's very hard to practice the steps and stay sober if you keep drinking every day. It's pretty hard to do, isn't it? It's hard to do. It's very hard for me to change if I'm going to be self-centered all day long, every day. My life's not going to change. I'm not going to change how I feel. I'm not going to change how I react. So I have to stop doing the things that that are killing me and then practice a different way. Does this make sense? And so step 6 and 7 is really the pinnacle of the program, and that's what he says next. It's the pinnacle of the program. If we look back at the steps and see how they work, we can see that when we took them, it gives us the ability to take 6 and 7. Now, I think the reason they only had 2 paragraphs in the big book on 6 and 7 was because the 4th step and 5th step is done very thoroughly and described very well in the big book. And they felt that anybody who had done that and been honest and taken a thorough 4th and 5th step could see their character defects, and we'd certainly be willing to find them objectionable and willing to have them removed. And then they talk about how you continued to do that the rest of your life. In step 1, we saw the problem. A lot of people come in here and they don't know what their problem is. And in step 1, our problem is that I have no power not to drink, and I have no power to put alcohol in my body successfully, and I can't manage my life so that I won't drink. I can't manage my life so that I won't need to have the obsession to drink. I can't do it. And it says in step 2, the solution is that I need a power that can do that for me, because I can't do it. Anybody here could fix themselves? Anybody here could successfully manage their lives and stop drinking and change? Well, if you do, you don't need to be here. But I couldn't do it on my own. I tried everything. And AA had a plan and a program that I do, and my life's changed. I don't feel the obsession to drink today. And therefore, I don't have to worry about putting it in my body. I don't know about later tonight, but right now I don't have it. And as long as I keep seeking God and doing the steps, I'll have a daily reprieve from that condition. So in step 3, we make a decision that we want to allow this power to work in our lives and to run my life and give me the power to choose about alcohol and the power to live. So I don't want to direct my life anymore. There's a good reason why. Does anybody know? It didn't work. When I played God and ran my life, it didn't work. I could never fix the world so it would be just right, so everything would be okay. Now I have a good day every once in a while, and be pretty good, you know, and 6 or 7 o'clock is feeling pretty good, but then at 8 I'll worry maybe about tomorrow and that it's not going to last. Anybody relate to that? Trying to fix the world so we would feel okay, achieve things, get things, fill our lives with things out there to make me okay. It was never enough. And in step 4, we want to identify the things in my personality that cause me to be blocked from God's power. Those are the things on the left-hand side, the personality characteristics of self-will. We all have them. And then in step 5, we want to see the exact nature and the truth, and then we can be willing to take 6 and 7 and change. So you see how the process works. You can't come in and do 6 and 7 well, but you can try with God's help. And it really helps to have the humility to do it is when you can see the truth in 4 and 5. And you know how you know when you need to do 6 or 7? How do you know during the day when you need to do it? Well, you're not feeling well. You're disturbed. Something's bothering you. And you're back in self. You're back in one of your character defects. And you have fear, you're angry, or you're you're irritable and you're restless and discontented. And so we know now that we stop, we ask God's help to change and practice a different way. But when you're new, it seems hard if you're new now and this seems information doesn't make sense. Well, we understand that, but keep coming back, get the book, study with somebody, you can listen to all the podcasts, you start with Doctor's Opinion, find out what the program is, work the steps with someone. Now, it says, sometimes getting self-awareness is painful. We've heard it said that the truth will make you free, but at first it was most likely make you miserable. I think anybody who's done a four-step can tell you it is painful to see it and see how your self-centered personality made a mess of your life. But you can't have any growth unless you can see the truth that it was me and it wasn't them. I was the root of my problems. The selfish and self-centered was the root of my problems. I was the problem, my self-centered personality, not anything out there. So step six is about willing to let go. And here's a point that they make that I didn't realize. After all, I'd worked for years with the things in my life that caused me problems. Joe and Charlie make the point that they were experts at being self-centered. They were experts at fear and being dishonest and self-seeking. And why? Because they practiced it. When you're a self-centered person, you see the world a certain way and you get good at reacting in this way. Now, it doesn't make our lives better. It causes a lot of harm, but we don't see that for a long time, right? And so when we're self-centered, when we see things, we're going to react a certain way. And then we won't like the way we see it now, and I say I need to be God-centered and see it differently. And that's what 6 and 7 is all about. And it says we made them part of our lives. We've worked at our character defects and built them into our personalities. So what we're really looking is at our personality. And remember, people wonder what the solution is, the spiritual experience or awakening. You've heard that. It's right at step 12, right? That's the solution. Well, the spiritual experience or awakening, when it's described in the big book, it just says a personality change sufficient to overcome alcoholism. We're going to change our personality. We're not going to be the person we used to be. Now, we couldn't do that on our own. We had to do that with God's help. And 6 and 7 is how we start. It says, through the power of step 4, we have seen how damaging these character defects are. If somebody's going to send me a thing in the mail and said, this is your life, and this is your personality, and then they're going to give a value to it. You know, this is my retirement plan. Fidelity's going to send me this in the mail. And it'd say, this is you. This is what you're worth. And you know what it's worth? Nothing. And yet we want to hold on to it, and we don't want to let go of this. And when we have this, how much is this worth? We can't even calculate. You see, and when we come in, we're actually given a gift. We're giving a picture of ourselves, which shows us this person. And then when we can see this person, we can change. Before we could see this, it was always them. It was always somebody else's fault. And until we can see the truth, we're not going to change. Yeah.
You're an alcoholic. As you were giving that example, there was this thinking on the left-hand side. As I look at that, if I remain on the left-hand side, it's costly. It means death and a lot of pain if I remain there. On the other hand, if I stay in the right-hand column, it means that. I'm going to be content, and I'm going to be useful, and I'm going to be able to have trust and faith in God. So it's the word I was looking for is priceless. The left-hand side is costly with my life if I keep it up.
Exactly.
My right-hand side is priceless.
Exactly.
The benefits I get from living on the right-hand side.
Dividends.
And as we, like Gary said, as we practice the steps, we want to stay on the right-hand side because we feel better. And our days are better. And so we don't want to be on the left-hand side. So he says here on page 90, we aren't ready to let go of some of our character defects. Step 6 is getting the willingness to let go of them. Once we're willing, we ask God to remove them in step 7. Now, 6 and 7 are companion steps. And I've heard people say, well, I'm on 6 and 7. I don't know what it means to be on it. You just need to be willing to change and then practice and ask God to humbly remove them and practice the different way. It's not anything you can study. Either you're willing to change and you don't want to be this self-centered personality anymore or not. And so there, and you'll be willing to do it. You're not on it. You're ready to do it if you've done a good fourth and fifth step. And it says these steps we take, they're beside each other. They're companion steps. And we see more defects all the time. As the longer we're in the program, more of it is revealed about our personality and more we're willing to let go of. So you start out and you're given as much as you can see in the beginning when you do your first, fourth, and fifth step, and then you keep doing it and there's more is revealed and you see more. And so you don't have to do a perfect fourth or fifth step, you just need to make a start, an honest start. It says we become willing to, and ask God to remove them. Now, if I ask God to remove them, it will happen. If I'm willing to let go and I honestly ask God to remove them, it will go away. It's always happened. When I don't honestly ask him and I'm not really willing to let go, it doesn't go away. And ask in the big book is a petition of prayer that we have an expectation it's going to happen. And I saw that in the book of James, they talk about that. It's a form of petition of expectation. So they say there's been a lot of discussion about these steps, but these are the simple basic tools of change. They're based on one of the oldest laws of human nature. Whatever you practice, you become good at. Now, whether it's baseball, piano, or typing, or fear, you learn that skill because you work at it. And he says you can't go to typing class and learn the theory of typing and be a good typist. Once you take the ideas the instructor gives you and put them in your mind, then you have to practice these ideas. That's why this is an action step. It's not in your mind saying, intellectually, I'm willing to let go. You're going to practice. You're going to try to be the opposite of your character defects with God's help. And as you go out, you sell it daily in the job because you own the skill, you own it through practice. And the point is, the more you practice this, the more you recognize when you're disturbed, you're on the left-hand side, and you can stop very quickly and ask God to help you be on the right-hand side and practice the opposite. So the longer you're in it, you don't want to be disturbed. You don't want to feel bad. There's no value to that. And so you're willing to let go much quicker. In the beginning, sometimes you can't see it right away. That's why sponsorship and discussing it with another person each day is very helpful. And it says we've accumulated our defects of character and drilled them into our personalities. And my personality is nothing but a pattern of mental habits that I've accumulated and practiced and made into a pattern. And each one of us is more than an individual personality this way. I did that with fear. Fear of approval, fear of not being good enough. Anything that happened, I would instantaneously look at it in relation to how it's going to relate to that. I'd have fear. I don't know about you, but if anything was going to happen at all, it was never going to be good. You know, before I came in here, I was always full of fear. Any change, it's always going to be bad. And it was the way I drilled my personality. I don't have to be that way anymore. It says, now that we have examined these things in step four, now that we have examined the set of patterns, we see some of them are unproductive. We should be willing to change them because not bringing any returns to our lives. In fact, they're bringing trouble. See, when we came in here, everybody thinks they have trouble with alcohol and people out there, you know, people that we blame for our lives and the mess of our lives. But when we come in here and after a while, we see it was us. And it was the way I saw things. And it was my selfish, self-centered personality. So it says on page 91, we have to practice something different. And it says, are these things objectionable? They should be. Objectionable. If they're not objectionable, you're not going to change. And so, an objectionable, I think, is in the heart. I think it's like Gary said, it's a true understanding of the value of the personality defects, how they've harmed me. And it's how you forgive yourself, too, because you see how you were run by your self-centeredness, and you really didn't have any power in your life to change. Your self-centered ran your life. And you really had no way to do a different way. You had no skills to practice a different way. But once you start on 6 and 7, we're now responsible for our days. If I'm having a bad day today, it's my fault. I practice my self-centered personality. And I can't blame other people. It says on 91, it's the power of these steps that makes our defects, our unproductive attitudes, objectionable. Then we'd be willing to let go of them. It says, if I want to change, I'm going to have to practice something different to take the place of my defects and unproductive attitudes. We change our personalities by the use of that principle, the principle of change. I think Chuck See talked about that. When he says, act your way into right thinking, what he's talking about, act the opposite of your character defect, and then your thinking will change, and then your life will change. And it says, if you want to change, you can't give in to the same old ideas produced by the same old thought patterns and the same old mind and old personality. My selfish, dishonest, self-seeking character. Now, it says, if we don't let go of our old ideas, absolutely, the result's what? Nil. And my old ideas are these characteristics of my personality that I've carried my whole life is the way I see things. And so I've been seeing the world wrong. Somebody said that what you really do in step 4 and 5 is you see how you saw everything wrong. It really wasn't the way it is. And it's distorted. It says, and my character is here because I practiced it. No one can brainwash us. No one can wipe out or remove these ideas from my mind because they're embedded there. In fact, a lot of people have old ideas. They won't take the 4th step. Their old ideas keep them from step 3. And I think you're only really willing to get rid of your old ideas completely when you're completely defeated. And then you're willing to go to any length. And I think willing to go to any length means be willing to let go of these old ideas and try something new, because my plan didn't work. As long as I think my plan will work, I won't let go of the old ideas. But when I can see that the old ideas killed me and they have no value, then why would I hold on to them? And that's the riddle of our existence. It says we can remove any objectionable idea from our minds by overriding it with better ideas. So this is what we're going to try to do. When an old idea comes up, we recognize it right away. Does anybody have a pattern that if somebody asks you to do something, immediately you think of why you don't want to do it? Mm-hmm. And it's usually a selfish reason. And so nobody's ever had that. So now I recognize that and I say, well, I have to do this. And a lot of times it's things at home that I'm asked to do. I don't know about you. And I'll say, sure, great idea. And it's fun to be able to let go of your old ideas. The things that we don't think we want to do, right? Because it interferes with our plan for the day, we just have to let go. And when you do, it's amazing. Anybody have ideas about things that they were sure were right, and they do their 4th and 5th step, and they realize how wrong they were? Mm-hmm. Anybody decide that they're not going to like a show or a book or something before they read it? And then they eventually watch it was great. Yeah, anybody make a decision based on what we think something's gonna be, and then we don't do it, and then it changes our life? Like, I didn't think Joe and Charlie could teach me anything, because, you know, I'm so brilliant. You know, Michael the Magnificent, and, you know, I know everything. And it sounded like a country band, Joe and Charlie. I mean, I thought they're gonna play music while they talk about the steps or something. And it was a silly idea. I know it's ridiculous, but I can laugh at myself. And it changed my life. It says it's very hard to do in the beginning. It's very hard to let go of our old ideas. You know why? Because they're my ideas. And that's why people die. They can't let go on the first step that their ideas, their management of their lives, killing them. I see people all the time who want to be here. They tell me they need to be here, this and that. And then they tell me a decision they made. Like one last week, didn't think he needed to go to meetings anymore. So he texted me, I won't be there, I don't need the meeting, I'm not going to do the meetings. And so that's an old idea that he believed is mine. He's dying of alcoholism, right? And his alcoholic mind told him it's a bad idea to go to a meeting. And so you want to say to him, well, who told you that? And so Then there was another one, a guy, he doesn't want to do the fourth step yet. He's not ready. He doesn't need to do it. And so I asked him who told him that, and he said he did. And I said, well, let's see how that works out for you. What kills alcoholics is we have old ideas and we believe them, and we're not willing to change. And the other thing is, I can't change anybody else's old ideas. I have enough trouble changing my own. And so it's very hard. It says it's hard to do, but the book says the old ideas will be cast aside and a new set of motives will begin to dominate the mind. And that's what a spiritual experience is. When you stop and you're seeing some situation and you're acting differently than you used to do it. You say, well, gee, how'd that happen? You know, people who used to come down the hall and you used to just cringe. They come down the hall and you just say, well, gee, they're just coming down the hall. You see, you just change the way you see things. And I couldn't do it on my own. It's a great gift. It says the old ideas die and we replace them with new ideas. So step six is based on this truth. If you want to change, you don't do what you want to do. We've heard that. People say, you know, if I don't want to do something, I have to do the opposite. Well, what they're talking about is if it's a self-centered motive, sometimes we have to change our mind. And you slay that old idea with inaction, so you pause. It says when we're agitated or doubtful, we pause and we ask for God's direction and the right action. We pause now. We hold ourselves back from reacting with the self-centered, and we react the way God wants us to. In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul says that successful living means daily dying. Anybody believe that? I do. And we have the St. Francis prayer. It's on the back of this inventory card, which is this. And the St. Francis prayer, it says, by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that I awaken to eternal life. And I meditate on this every day, and this is really true. And when I do the St. Francis prayer, which is really step six and seven, when I try to bring love instead of hatred and forgiveness where there's wrong and harmony where there's discord and truth where there's error and faith where there's doubt, when I try to do that, and to the extent that I'm able to do that, then my days are great. And it says, I want to seek rather comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood. Anybody want to be understood when they came here? And now we have to be loved and to be loved. It's the opposite. But when we do that, we're free of the bondage of what? Self. And so step six and seven is we pray in step three for freedom from the bondage of self. And step six and seven is how, with God's help, he relieves us of that. But I won't be relieved unless I'm willing to let go. It says, it means that we're dying in certain areas on page 92 at the top so that we can live somewhere else. It also has to do with, is God everything or nothing? What areas of your life are you managing and not giving to God? When you're managing those areas, you're playing God in that, and you're managing that, you're not going to have any peace till you give it to God. It says, only we can slay ourselves. Successful living is daily dying. Only I can do that. We have to die in some small way so we can live in a better way. Anybody ever listen to the promises at the meeting? They're read every once in a while. It says, suddenly we'll realize God is doing for us we could not do for ourselves. And when I realize that is when I'm doing things different, my pattern of reacting is different than it was. Because I wasn't that person. The person I was when I came in here, I wouldn't have been able to do that. I wouldn't have even seen it. The real problem is that most people cling to what they are, even though they don't like it. It's painful, but at least they're familiar with it. Remember, we're not going to change unless the pain of change is greater than the pain of staying the way it is. Or the pain, I said it wrong. You know what I meant. Anyway, yeah, there you go. I like to ask people, I like this, how do you get a new car? The very first thing you do to get a new car, anybody know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Jimmy, this is going to help you, Jimmy. Okay. Write this down. Write this down. This is free, too. Most people will say you start by looking in the newspaper by going to the dealership. That's tight. The first thing you have to do is give up on the old car. See, you have to give up on the old car and say, I want a new car. I have to give up on the old me, right? And I want a new me. And it says, I can put no tires or whatever, you'll still have the old one. Somewhere along the line, you're going to say, I'm through with this. Then you're on the road to a new car. That's what we have to do in steps 6 and 7. We have to give up in certain areas. As we stop doing the things we want to do, we force ourselves to do the things we don't want to do. As we force ourselves to do these things, we get the benefits of these new thought patterns. They bring us different returns. Anybody ever get upset and want to say something to the other person and tell them exactly what's wrong with them and why they're wrong? And then you do that and nothing gets better. But if you pause and you say, okay, what's really happening here, God? Help me see it differently. Maybe even keep your mouth shut and see it differently. And then you go on and there's nothing happened. Who benefits from that? See, we benefit by letting go of all the things that were killing us. We get such a benefit that I wonder some days why we cling on to the old ideas. We all do it. It's the riddle of our existence. It says, we'll open up in a few minutes. If it says on the, we've learned that our lives are like a business. We have a certain, bottom of 92, we have a certain stock in trade and our lives are based on what we have on hand to trade in. If we're trading with better ideas, they're going to bring better returns in the business of living. As they bring in better returns, then we'll bind to these ideas even more and make them part of our personalities. We'll look at the new ideas and say, these are valuable, I like these. So when we come in here, our lives are usually pretty messed up, right? Things are really bad. And we can't stop drinking or using, and our relationships are in disarray, and all sorts of things are bad. And they're all caused by my self-centered personality. And unless I want to see that and want to change, nothing's going to change. And remember, alcohol was our solution. Everybody thought it's a problem. It's not. It was a solution to me being self-centered, sober. I couldn't live successfully in the world, and alcohol would seem like a good idea. So we drank to change the way we felt based on how we saw the world. And so if we see the world through a God-centered personality, then we're not going to get the emotional damage that we got from self-centered, and alcohol won't come in the picture. And so we're going to substitute one spirit for another. We're going to substitute God and God-centered living in the way we see things versus self-centered living, and then alcohol won't be an option. And so we treat the disease of alcoholism by changing the way we see the world with God's help, and then alcohol won't be the solution. So we go to God for our changes, and we do it starting with 6 and 7. We want to let go of this old personality, help God change me and be the other person. And it works. People will talk about it. If you do 6 and 7, when you do it, things get better almost immediately. I had to go to a hospice house today. I saw somebody that was really special to me, and he was dying. And I hadn't done that for a while, but I really wanted to go. And I saw several people I knew there. And then I was thinking about the God pole. And, you know, so they were talking about the office or something, and how, like, the God pole was just, I would hold the pole in the hallway when things were getting bad, and I'd just pause and hold that to get centered so I would see things differently and I wouldn't get frazzled. And it really worked. And then I noticed, after a while, the nurses were holding the God pole. And then sometimes I'd just stand there and hold the pole, and they asked me what was wrong. I say nothing. I just holding the pole. But I need that. And the other thing I use is this card. I used to have this card on my desk, and I, whenever I'm bothered, I just look at this. I say, well, no, I need to stop. I need to stop right now if I want the day to get better. So somebody asked you how your day is. Your day is good or bad depending on how well you work 6 or 7. And then we inventory all day, and then we inventory it at night. So I'm going to open it up now, and then next week we'll pick up with some more of this. I hope you found that it was helpful.